Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
Hi, this is Rod, in honour of Bo, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport from the Eurosport Green Room in the aftermath of the match of the men's tournament so far. Nick Kyrgios going down in four sets to Grigor Dimitrov. Just before we get our teeth and our claws into that one, I must first back reference the lovely Rod and the tribute he has paid to his dearly departed dog Bo in our intro today. Thank you, Rod, for being a supporter and for doing it in the name of your lovely faithful friend Bo. But we move on to matters tennis. David Law alongside me, Catherine Whittaker. David was in commentary for how many sets of that truly thrilling match between Dimitrov and Kyrgios?
I had the privilege of doing sets 2 and 4 of that match, and both of them just incredible. Particularly the fourth set was one of the best sets I've commentated on. I mean, just in terms of sheer fun and drama and brilliant tennis and ridiculous retrieving and audacious shot making. I mean,
for anyone that wasn't watching, David, and why weren't you watching? I know people have lives and jobs to do. If you weren't watching, just the vague narrative of the match was Grigor Dimitrov went up 2 sets to love, both very, very narrow sets. And then Kyrgios fought back in the fourth, won it 6-3. The first two were tiebreak sets. Yep. Kyrgios fought back, won the third 6-3. It looked like the 5-setter, the big comeback, was on. It went to a fourth set tiebreak, and somehow, Grigor Dimitrov managed to convince himself that the worst wasn't going to happen. And I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, first and foremost, if we take it from the start, Kyrgios came out as I love to see him, like that sort of freshly hashed chick with all the sort of fluffy hair and all the excitement and bouncing and on his tiptoes.
Didn't last long, though, David.
It did. Well, the thing is, he threw everything at Dimitrov for about 5 games. And Dimitrov just soaked it up and just stayed with him. And to me, the biggest story of the match was the evolution that this signified of Grigor Dimitrov from what he used to be. He used to be Kyrgios. He used to be the shot maker who everybody oohed and aahed about and got on all the highlight reels, but actually never really put it all together to convince and produce results that talent should suggest he should. And here he was, formerly primetime Grigor, becoming this reliable winner at the end. I mean, there were some wobbles in there, don't get me wrong. He served for the second set at 5-4 and tightened up horribly, just as he did in that ATP Finals match against David Goffin. And then the same thing happened when he was trying to get over the line at the end of the fourth set. But he still won.
And you could see on his face throughout the latter portion of the third and for a lot of the fourth, I felt like I could see the thought process of, I'm not going to lose this from two sets of love up, am I? I can't. This can't happen, can it? Oh, my gosh, is it happening? No, it can't be happening. Oh, my gosh, it might be happening.
Yes.
That's what it felt like. And somehow, I know Joe Konta talks a lot about catastrophizing. I felt like I could see the catastrophizing on his face. It's almost as luxurious as a position being two sets to love up is, it's also the most precarious position. You have everything to lose. It's either great or it is the worst possible scenario, which is losing from two sets to love up. And I felt like I could see all of that going through the mind of Grigor Dimitrov and running through all of the other times when he's lost from winning positions and lost when he should have won. And I'm so impressed that he found a way to come through that, particularly the way he found a way to do it in tie breaks.
Yes, because that's tough against the biggest, one of the biggest, most deadly servers.
One of those, and the gutsiest server as well, probably the bravest player in tough tie break situations. Okay, bravery doesn't always pay off, but you know you're playing someone that is just going to, that's not going to tighten up or show signs of tightening up. They're not going to play it safe. When the going gets tough, he takes more risks, Nick Kyrgios, and he's shown me something I didn't think was there yet from Grigor Dimitrov. I didn't think was there this tournament. I picked Kyrgios to win. Who'd have thought that Kyle Edmund would have been my my best prediction this men's tournament?
Yes.
I mean, wow.
You nailed that one from the start. But I, my reaction to it at the end was that was life-affirming sport that we just witnessed, both in terms of its brilliance.
Sport-affirming sport,
And the way in which they greeted each other at the end. I mean, I'm filling up just thinking about it. I mean, the way they just sort of took each other's faces in their hands and just delivered these truths to each other.
Well, we don't know what they haven't come into press yet, and I'm sure they will both be asked. Well, tell me then, David.
Well,
give me a transcript.
What I'm reading is that Kyrgios was saying to Dimitrov, believe in yourself from here, the gist was you can win this thing now. And I mean, I just think it was lovely. He patted Dimitrov on the back on the way past when he was leaving the court. Dimitrov was giving him a round of applause and trying to get the crowd to make sure that, just all of that.
It was everything, wasn't it?
Especially
it was everything.
Given that they had gone toe-to-toe and they had been really
The only thing more you could have wanted from that match was a fifth set. And I know you didn't because you were commentating the fourth and a commentator always, or a good commentator, always wants the climax, don't they? Always wants the winning point. And I'm very glad for you, David, that you got that. But selfishly, I wanted a fifth
set. I mean, look, I wouldn't have minded watching a fifth set. Who cares who's commentating on it? It was a treat to be able to call the end to it, of course. But that's the other thing it did, is just underline how there is nothing like a best-of-five-set match that ignites like that. There wasn't a lull. It was all there. And long live best-of-five-set
tennis. We can't ignore the fact, though, David, and we will get called out on it if we don't touch upon it, that what also was there was some questionable behaviour by Kyrgios. People have different takes on it. I personally I'm less sort of offended or affronted by it than somewhere, but I've heard a lot of commentary tonight. I've seen a lot on Twitter, a lot of criticism of Nick Kyrgios's behaviour, particularly his behaviour directed towards the box. For me, it was pretty reminiscent of stuff that Andy Murray has been guilty of in times past. You know, there was him shouting at his box for not being vocal enough, and then when they start being vocal, he shouts at them to sit down. What are you doing? You're being far too vocal. And there was lots of stuff about the string tension, which he thought was his box's fault in the first couple of sets. I personally think it was all on the right side of the line, and it's what he needs to do to keep himself loose. You know, it might not be all particularly edifying, but it added to the drama, and I think it all remained largely, or no, entirely, really, on the right side of the line. But I do see the issue because you know, I look at my 12-year-old nephew and he thinks Nick Kyrgios, he copies everything that Nick Kyrgios does, and I wouldn't necessarily want him copying the way Nick Kyrgios was behaving. So as much as I understand it, and I think it's fine, you know, for me as a 31-year-old adult to look at, I see the problem, and yeah. I don't know. I want Nick Kyrgios to be Nick Kyrgios, and I know that how he behaved tonight on the tennis court was probably the best way for him to bring the best out of himself. He needed to do it, but equally, you know, I do see the boring argument on the other side. Yeah, that these guys, whether they invite it or not, are role models, and you know, all of
well,
that.
There's no question. I mean, we commentate. I was at the opposite end, the player box that he was directing his rants at. I mean, we saw all the body language that you could tell he was shouting something, and I couldn't hear what it was. But if I had been watching that on TV with my 6 and 7 year old. They would probably have said to me, "What's he doing?"
And you what know, would you say?
And I'd have probably said, "Oh, he's just being silly." You know, I'd have probably said something like that. Because you're right.
And the next time they're being silly, they'll start shouting at you about this string tension on their rackets.
There's no question. I wouldn't really want them to behave like that necessarily, but.
And it's really difficult.
I don't want to give him a hard time because it's human. You can't make these people into robots. That everybody's different, and I feel if it is as you've described it, that it was the right side of the line. And look, I'd rather concentrate on the fact that this guy has, in fact, both of them. I described it to Leon Smith. In my view, this match was a win-win because you have one guy who's bursting out from his disappointments and failure to deliver on his talent in Grigor Dimitrov, and to become, regardless of whether he ends up winning a slam, he's doing the absolute utmost with what he's got now. He's been totally professional. Maybe his nerve will ultimately fail him and he won't be able to deliver. He has got issues with that. But he is doing his best now to deliver on his talent. And meanwhile, you've got Nick Kyrgios, who is letting Australia know who he is. And that is fundamentally a decent fella, really. I mean, he's an idiot sometimes.
He'll always
be
complicated. He'll always be contradictory. He'll never be black and white. We must accept that about him. But, yeah, I completely agree. Win-win. I just felt if we didn't touch upon it...
No, that's perfectly fair enough.
Yeah.
But I tell you, just as a word as well, some of the shot-making that I've seen tonight and some of the movement, I can't quite get my head around. I was describing some missile forehands from Kyrgios, and you could see the look on his face. How are you getting to these balls?
What adjectives did you resort to, David? Give me a selection of your vocabulary.
Well, between Leon Smith and I, honestly, I think we spent one game just laughing at every stroke that was hit, because you've got Dimitrov somehow manages to contort his body and slide into balls and get to stuff that you're like, That's not possible, surely. And then it's the sheer gambler's nerve of Kyrgios when he's under the most pressure to just roll up to the baseline, belt a second serve ace down the centre, break point down. And honestly, the only reaction is to laugh.
I absolutely love it.
He thinks nothing of it.
Yeah. But it's the only way he can do it. It's bluffing, isn't it? It's not that he's not nervous.
It's like he's trying to fool himself.
Courage isn't not being afraid. Courage is being afraid and doing it anyway.
Yeah. He laughs in the face of fear.
It's not that he's not afraid. It's not that he doesn't want it or get nervous. It's the only way he knows how to cope with all of those things. Yeah. So.
Well, we've just had Mats Wilander in here just a moment or two ago before he left, saying, just marvelling at it. He was talking about the Miami match between Kyrgios and Federer. And
match of the year, he said.
Yeah, regardless of whether Kyrgios is your thing or not, I'm sorry, he makes the sport better.
He does. He absolutely does. I can't wait to find out what the Eurosport viewing figures were for it. If we can have a match like that every slam, we'll be doing just fine.
Yeah.
Grigor Dimitrov now takes on Kyle Edmund. He's had his own four-set tussle against Andreas Seppi over on the High Sense Arena. Could very easily have gone to five. You know, not quite the same high-octane stuff, but pretty decent match. A very, very impressive, yet another coming from behind victory for Kyle Edmund, setting a break down for him.
Yeah.
And he completely turned it on, and he's really He's playing it down in everything he says, in press and everything. But this is a 180 transformation for him. He was coming to be defined by being a guy that lost the tight matches, by being a guy that would be in winning positions and lose, or as soon as it went to a fifth set, you knew he didn't have anything left to give. He has completely turned that on his head and defined himself, certainly this tournament, by winning the tight matches, by digging deep and finding a grit when he's behind that he's never shown before. He might be playing it down and doing the professional Joe Conter thing of talking about the process and I'm not doing that much different. Something is different. Yeah. Something is different.
He's found a way to bring out his best, hasn't he? When he's struggling and to improve and to not go away. And the way he lost that first set, I mean, he was clinging on all the way through that first set. He had five break points to save in one game. He served his way out of it. He got into the tie break. He lost the tie break. And you're just thinking, Seppi was playing beautifully. He's absorbing.
He's a beautiful player, yeah. Andrea Seppi. Really, I mean, I know he's rarely truly spectacular. He has had spectacular moments. He's had them against Nick Kyrgios here at the Australian Open. He's had them against Roger Federer here at the Australian Open. But he doesn't. He's never had as much limelight as he deserves because he's so understated and unspectacular. But he's a very smooth, pleasing player to watch.
He was just redirecting Kyle's big shots and turning his power back on him.
But Kyle's power in the first set and a half wasn't what it usually is. He definitely... And I don't necessarily think that was a physical thing. It was very easy to put it down to physical. I think he was physically okay. I suspect it was nerves and tension.
Well, that's... I thought at the time it was physical. I thought he's drained from the five setters. This is all new to him. And he's run out of gas a bit. And he's just trying to hang on. Then Leon Smith came in our commentary box and he'd been courtside watching and part of the camp. And he said, honestly, I think he's fine physically. He said exactly that, what you've just said, that it's a huge deal to him. It's a huge occasion and the nerves were there and they inhibited him. And he went a set and a break down,
and
but he worked
up.
His way through it, didn't he?
He's set and a break down, you loosen up, you hit through it. He found that forehand. Let's be honest, Carl needs that forehand to be able to win through because if not, if he's dropping balls short at all, if he's giving the opportunity, if he's giving opponents the opportunity to get the ball onto his backhand, it's not a terrible backhand, but it will break down in the end. If the ball is consistently getting onto the backhand, what he needs to do is hit that forehand so hard that it's not coming back. Yeah. It's not coming
backhand. It's popping up for a clean winner,
well, exactly,
the next one.
Yeah, and he wasn't doing that in the first set and a half, and he looked a bit impotent, and then suddenly I'm sure the stats are available if you have them all to hand or if you work for IBM or something, but I'm quite sure there was an extra 15 miles per hour on that forehand.
No, he started to bully. I mean, he said himself, once I edged that second set, I took over, and that's exactly what he did. Now, looking ahead, I said in commentary that I could see Dimitrov being a better opponent for him than Kyrgios.
I 100% agree. Yeah, we had him in the studio tonight on Eurosport, and it wasn't a live production. I knew it was going to run later, which was a bit awkward because we were filming it at the time when Kyrgios and Dimitrov were midway through the second set. It was anybody still at that stage, but of course, the biggest question to ask him was to look ahead to the next match, and it was a really tricky one to deal with. And I desperately wanted to ask him, who would you prefer to play? But you and I both know, David, that tennis players never give a good answer to that question.
They don't answer that one.
it's the question you want to hear the answer to that the player will never give a good answer to.
Yeah.
So I didn't bother, and I just asked him whether he'd be watching, and he said yeah when he got back to his hotel, assuming it was still on, and I think it probably still was, but I agree with you. I think Dimitrov's a better matchup for him. I know he lost in Brisbane, but
he was absolutely right with him.
I think he's up to it physically, mentally. Over five sets, maybe against somebody of Dimitrov's quality, maybe there's issues, but I think physically Carl's up to it this tournament.
I think the occasion is a big question.
Yeah.
Dimitrov knows what this is all about. The only thing I would say, it's also different when you feel that you should be winning these matches. And we've seen Dimitrov have problems this week on
absolutely.
That court against lower-ranked players.
So, I absolutely think... I think that's a factor, for sure. I'm going to be very interested to see if they put that night session. Eurosport will certainly be requesting it to be night session because, obviously, for us, that's better viewership.
I'd have thought not, to be honest. Nadal, yeah. Cilic, I'd have thought that would be night session.
I would have thought so too, but Nadal does like, all other things being equal, he does prefer a day session. I haven't looked ahead too far in the fall. I don't think anything brutal is forecast weather-wise for the next few days. I'm going to find that very interesting, I think, to find out what they do scheduling-wise for that one. Because I suspect probably whatever Nadal asks for, he'll get. Because if he wanted night session, I think he's only played night session once.
I don't know. I would have thought that Australian TV would be a big factor here.
But so is American TV, and I think the third day session match is the biggest one for American TV. I don't know. If it was Kyrgios, it would be night session.
Yes,
for sure, but I await eagerly. But Nadal, we've given away the fact there that Nadal plays Cilic in the quarterfinals. Both of them coming through four set battles, and I think they were actually battles. Nadal's battle against Diego Schwartzman obviously got a lot more attention because he seemed to be cruising, setting a break up, and suddenly here comes Diego Schwartzman. In fact, I think it was a break up twice.
He was amazing.
Oh, I love Diego Schwartzman. I love him, and I know commentators and pundits and us lot get a bit of criticism for referring too much to his height, but it is significant.
He's listed as 5'7", which is the biggest lie. He's nowhere near that.
It's not. Look, 5'10" is short for a tennis player. It's short enough to, you know, on occasion be worth referencing. He is substantially shorter than any other top level tennis player, isn't he? He's, you know, okay, there were the Rokas brothers, but they've not been around for a while. There was Michael Chang, but first, I think he's a bit shorter than they were. I mean, he is.
Well, Olivier Rokas was 5'4". I would say he's marginally smaller. Marginally taller.
5'5"?
I'd say 5'5". Somebody's given him 2 inches that, yeah. Frankly, he doesn't
and
warrant.
And I know, look, we all know that height matters in tennis. There is a law of diminishing returns. You know, I don't think a 7-foot bloke would get on too well, but, you know, the height is a factor, and he is pound for pound a top 10 tennis player.
Yeah.
Probably a top 5 tennis player. And I love his attitude. I love his attitude.
Crowds love him.
I love the way he plays. Honestly, there wasn't really a moment that I ever thought he was winning that match, but
no.
I loved that he was trying that hard, and I loved that he was finding a way to believe, because Gasquet against Federer last night, I don't think he ever thought he was winning that tennis match.
Not in the slightest.
And that's really disappointing as a viewer.
But
and I do think Diego Schwartzman found a way to convince himself to believe.
I'm afraid
today.
That has been one of the disappointing factors of Richard Gasquet's career. The fact that he hasn't... I'm not even sure he's that bothered, to be honest. I think he wants to have a good career and he wants to push to a certain level and probably not beyond it. So that's your quarterfinal lineup in the men's.
Yeah, Cilic coming through against Pablo Carreño. But it was a good match. There were moments. It was a four-set tiebreak. It could have gone to 5, but it always just had the flavour of a Cilic win. I didn't see every single minute of it, but it always felt to me like a Cilic win. He's playing well. The courts suit him here. I think he might prefer day session. I don't know. The hotter.
I think he'd take either. I mean, he's a good player, Cilic, but the movement against Nadal is a big question mark. I think he'd have to come out and play US Open 20, whatever year it was,
without
14
question. But
style.
Just a quick thing, Nadal was nervous today. He was really nervous, so if Cilic can find a way to realise that could be a factor, certainly early on, you know, and not let Nadal race to a quick lead and settle down, if he can find a way to capitalise on early nerves, which I think will be there, then he could be not necessarily onto a winner, but I think that's probably his best chance. Just very quickly before we start talking about the women's matches from today, on the subject of day-night sessions, David, we are going to see Roger Federer in broad daylight tomorrow. Oh, no. Do you think he'll set on fire? Or I mean...
I'm pleased they've done that. I mean, I think it's the right decision anyway. When you look at the matchups,
absolutely the right
as well,
decision. Roger Federer against Martin Fucsovics. I mean, he's done brilliantly well. Yeah. Hungarian guy to ranked 80 in the world.
I've not seen him play, you know. I don't think.
I've seen a few points here and there, but not much. 80 in the world from Hungary. They will be third on the day session tomorrow, and Djokovic against Heung-Chung will be the night session. Yeah. And that is absolutely the right decision.
It is.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On the women's side, what we've seen today is a 3-sets victory for the glorious single-handed backhand of Carla Suarez Navarro.
Yeah, I love the way she was asked, you know, how did you come up with this backhand? And she just sort of says, oh, I don't know, I just started playing when I was 9 or 10 and it just felt naturally. I just sort of went swish and there it is.
It's funny that, you know, Roger Federer says he wouldn't teach his kids a single-handed backhand. I find that desperately disappointing.
Maybe just a bit bashful. What do you think?
Do you think so?
Maybe.
When has Roger Federer ever been bashful?
Well, you know, everybody's got to be a little bit sometimes.
Anyway, Carla Suarez Navarro will now take on Caroline Wozniacki,
who's getting
pretty
better.
Brutal today against Madeleine Rybakova. Did seem to have a shoulder problem, which was affecting her serve towards the end. But in all honesty, I don't think that had much bearing on the result of that match. I think, was it 6-love second set? I think it was a 6-love second set. Yeah. Magdalena Rybakova, of course, the Wimbledon semi-finalist. That coming back from match point in the second round against Jana Fett for Wozniacki has been the best possible thing for her in this tournament, I think.
And she could still win the title. There's no question about it. Elise Mertens also through to the quarterfinals, so that's a great story. The other match we've got on the court at the moment looks like Alina Svitolina is going to beat Denise Ralatova. That's 1-set to love
They were very lucky that they got this match on court, weren't they? Because apparently they have this midnight cut-off for starting matches on the Rod Laver. It's never been properly tested because the Daria Gavrilova Elise Mertens match the other night started at 11:59. So Tennis Australia weren't forced into an awkward position, and luckily the Kyrgios Dimitrov match didn't go to a 5th set, so they were able to get this one on court, and Alina Svitolina is obliging as we watch a 1st set highlights reel, which is all Svitolina just pounding her way through.
She's had a couple
one.
Of close ones. She's starting to look the business now as well.
She has.
Can I just say, we're on the way into the Eurosport green room where we sit right now, which is deserted apart from us now because everybody's gone home. Alex Kuretsia just came up to us and he said he'd got approached earlier in the day and said, are you Alex Kuretsia? And he sort of said, yes. And he's, you know, you're thinking, oh, world number 2, Grand Slam. He said, I heard you on the tennis podcast yesterday.
It's my favourite anecdote ever.
We are delighted by that, of course.
As we are. I'm sure the same is happening to Naomi Brody as we speak.
Unquestionably. She's now in Stockport. She's getting stopped in the street.
I don't think she is. I think she's on a pretty miserable plane home from Australia,
probably,
David.
Yeah.
Any other business? Any other things to report? I like the look of the women's matches tomorrow.
Garcia
against Keys to start off on Rod Laver.
Oh, brilliant. And I'm on the early shift, so
yeah,
I get to see
that. Yeah, I love that. And then
it's
Kerber against Shea. And I think Kerber's winning that, but
We didn't get a chance to talk about Shea against Radvanskaya.
If you
get to see a couple of the little highlights from that match, some of the rallies were just bonkers.
She outran Radvanskaya. That's the line that Joe Jury gave me earlier.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I loved it. So I think, David, if you've got nothing to input, I mean, today's tennis has sort of spoken for itself, hasn't it?
It kind of has.
It's a day that's all about the tennis.
Although I do have to say I was quite alarmed to see student Matt sending us the tally of how many people are voting that you are going to win our rematch as 21-5 in your favour.
Who are the five?
Well, I was one of them. I voted
amazing
for myself. Obviously, like the politicians do, you know, when they vote for their own party.
Oh, yeah, there's a picture of you at the polling booth slotting your ballot paper into the box. On that bombshell, we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, with Melanie Bowes, with Triple S, with TennisBalls.com, with Charlie the Ferret and his lovely mum, but mostly with Charlie the Ferret, and with La Manga Club, responsible for the forehand that is
going to be unleashed
and going to win me that rematch. And we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.